We wouldn't be able to keep this archive going without your support. Donate online today at wixr.org.
It's really a treat having Robert here with me. He's gonna tell about what's going on this Wednesday night with his new film, and I'm telling you, this is a very, very exciting thing. So we're gonna be talking about this throughout, you know, the show this morning, and playing music from that, because these things aren't just, you know, it's not just a frozen moment in time, which it is, but It's more of the story of who we are in our culture.
Correct, sir.
So how did you tell everybody what's coming
is
up?
Okay, So my new film is called Newport and the Great Folk Dream. Made it here in Memphis with a team of Memphians, Laura Jean Hocking, Kim Lloyd, numerous others.
Some good folks there.
Yeah, and a friend of mine in New York was crucial to making it all happen, Joe Lauro of Historic Films. He acquired this footage of the Newport Folk Festivals between 1963 and 1966. Mm-hmm. If you're saying, why does that ring a bell? Isn't that when Dylan went electric?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Right.
That's right.
Right.
And we actually got, among the fun things we got to do was to get the negative of Dylan going electric, transfer it to 4K, and re-edit those performances.
You're kidding.
Yeah, man.
Really? Oh, that's big time. No, seriously, that is big time.
It was really exciting to put our own stamp on it. But yeah, so the movie proceeds chronologically over those 4 years of social turmoil and musical innovations, conflict.
Yeah,
and so we tell the story. We tell the story of the Newport Folk Festival's evolution from like its dream of becoming a great exemplar of American democracy, and then the success of that and the turmoil that results, I guess.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. And, you know, these folks were at the forefront of, you know, hearing about these artists and actually giving them money to come play, which didn't happen here in the South. I mean, you know, people like Mississippi John Hurt. I don't know.
He's in the movie.
He's in the movie. Okay.
We're going to play him this morning. Brought a record.
That's great. But, you know, people like that who had been pretty much living in obscurity. And the fact that people get out and find these folks. And we know a lot of people in Memphis who were in that generation of young white kids back in the 60s who did that in Memphis, a little smaller scale than Newport did, but who did that?
Yeah, every bit the same scale. I mean, finding people, we know people who were blues artists who were rediscovered during that time and got careers. The festival, there's a great moment with Doc Boggs, a country sort of old-timey bluegrass banjo player, not really bluegrass, but old-timey banjo player. He's interviewed in the movie by Gene Ritchie, and he says, yeah, I'm a retired coal miner. I didn't think about getting back into music till Mike Seeger found me about 4 weeks ago.
Oh, no,
yeah,
really?
Yeah, man. I mean, it is. These people are fresh from obscurity and back on a big stage.
Incredible. God, I love it. Well, look, let's jump right into the music. What are we going to hear first?
What we're going to hear first is The Cuckoo Bird. I thought I'd go with a total classic.
Okay.
Old-timey
thing.
And
you're going to spin this,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I can do it.
Robert is the DJ because Willie does not know how to play the record player.
Man, it's just pushing a button, Willie. I'll get you on it before we're all done. So this is Clarence Ashley. We hear him in the movie perform this song. This is a 78 recording, but we hear him live in Newport and the Great Folk Dream, which will be... there's still some tickets left. Okay. Wednesday night, 7 p.m. here at Crosstown.
Right.
Clarence Ashley.
Gonna build me log cabin on a mountain so high so I can see Willie as he goes on by. Mm-hmm.
Was cool.
It's cool too because he's young there in the movie. You know, he's like it's 40 years later. Wow. He's playing it a little slower.
Yeah,
and I actually think the fidelity in the movie is maybe
better.
Yeah.
Okay. So you know, it always amazed me. I've told you know Furry Lewis's story a million times. You know, and doing tours with people and things like that, and the fact that. You know, he was, I mean, he wasn't a big star, but he had a business going in the 1920s. And so many of these people had great businesses going, had great careers. And all of a sudden, the Depression hits, and for whatever reason, this kind of music, just the floor dropped out from under them.
Yep.
And it was another 30 years.
Yep.
Isn't that something? Is this something that you find all the time?
I mean, yeah. You know, you go back to Sam Charters coming around Memphis in the late 1950s. Mm-hmm. His book, really, I think, in a way, that track we just heard, Clarence Ashley doing Cuckoo Bird, is from the Anthology of American Folk Music, also called the Harry Smith Collection. Mm-hmm. The Harry Smith Collection really jump-started the re-interest in that music.
Right.
And kickstarted the folk movement. Sam Charters coming around Memphis in the late 50s really jump started here. I know Jim Dickinson talked about. He said I read in Sam Charters' book that Gus Cannon was a yard man on Park Avenue. Right. So I went up and down Park Avenue and I found him. You know.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. I mean, you can't get any better than the truth. You know, you really can.
Yeah.
I mean, it really resonates, and I love that. Well, what have we got next?
One of the songs we put, one of the musical groups that was new to me through this footage from the Newport Folk Festivals was a Carolina group called the Moving Star Hall Singers.
Okay.
Now, I'd heard of Bessie Jones and the Georgia Sea Isle Singers.
Mm-hmm.
They're a popular, you know.
Right, yeah.
Way down in the obscure, dark end of things, they're
right.
Popular.
Yes, right. 82 people do about them, right? Yes.
And so the junior group to them is the Moving Star Hall Singers.
Okay.
And one day I came into the edit room and Laura Jean Hocking, the editor and producer, had found this performance by them and she threw it up on the screen. I was like, okay, That goes early in the movie because it's a familiar, the song itself is familiar to many people who knew the folk movement, but the way they do it is very different.
Right.
And this tells you that, in the movie, this tells you that, hey, this folk festival is not going to be necessarily what you're expecting.
Yeah.
So this is the Moving Star Hall Singers doing Michael Row the Boat Ashore.
All right. We ain't hearing it yet. Hang on.
Aux 1, aux 2?
Yeah, I'm in aux 1. Nope, that's right. I did not have aux 1. Okay, you know, just...
Hey, it's buttons on a machine,
it's
man.
It's buttons on a machine. I'm not the button guy. Come on. Here we go. Let's try this again.
Here we go.
That is transcendent there.
Yeah, man. Cool, man. I'm glad you think so.
I love it when you hear the homemade quality of this. It's just there's not much outside influence. Somebody's heard the song, teach it to these other people, and everybody puts their own spin on it.
That's the folk tradition right there.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
I love that.
That's not the version that Peter, Paul, and Mary sang.
That's right. Yeah. And I grew up with that. My older brother was a folk singer.
Oh.
And he had, you know, I mean, I grew up when he was 9 years older than me. So when I was 9 or 10 years old, I was listening to Pete Seeger and tons of the Kingston Trio and Peter, Paul, and Mary and the Rooftop Singers and Mose Allison was in that group and all that. And it was just amazing to me because that music was not on the radio much.
Right.
You know, I mean, Peter, Paul, and Mary, you know, and the Kingston Trio did get on the radio. But, yeah, I loved that music. And it's kind of a lot of that is at the core of what I know about music.
Uh-huh.
You know, those kinds of songs and those songs that – you know, just kind of grew up through the ages with people.
When we set out to make the movie, at first I thought, I mean, I contemplated, can I make this folk festival movie without Peter, Paul, and Mary, without Joan Baez, without the stars?
Yeah, right.
And what I realized was when we interviewed George Ween, who's the founder of the Newport Folk Festival, founder of the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival, founder of numerous festivals, he said, we use the stars to attract an audience so we could introduce them to the other stuff. And I was like, George, that's going to be the plan. Yeah. We're going to do it. We'll put the stars in there. So Peter, Paul, and Mary are in there.
That's right.
Joan Baez, Judy Collins, Pete Seeger, they're all in there,
right.
But they don't dominate.
Yeah.
And Dylan's in there, but that's definitely pushing, you know, I like the weird stuff.
Uh-huh.
And so we went for some weird stuff.
Oh, that's profound. I mean, you know, just his attitude about that. And I do see that. And it's great because people don't know what they don't know.
Uh-huh.
And until they hear it, you know, and once they do hear it, though, it resonates with some people to the point where they go out and learn more about the music and it just keeps spreading. You know, it's that whole thing about not letting these people and their art die.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
It's just saying it out loud.
Well, I got queued up now. I got one from Como, Mississippi, right down the highway from us. This is, yeah, that CD. This is going to be Fred McDowell and his wife at church leading a version, much like the last version was. You might not be familiar with that version of that song. This is Amazing Grace. It's a different version of this song, Fred and Annie McDowell. About it. Yeah, that's
man, I love that.
Uh-huh.
Who recorded that?
I think that came out, you know, there was a guy in Chicago, Pete Welding, who recorded a bunch of the Chicago guys, and I think he was down, I know that's on his label, I think, so yeah. I think maybe he was the one behind it.
Okay.
I mean, how smart is that? Show up in church and bring microphones and get them. That's Fred. With, you know, Fred's pretty well known. Annie, his wife,
right?
She's featured in the movie quite heavily.
Okay.
One of the things I'm most excited about in the movie, original research. Mm-hmm. People began to talk about the Blues House. 1964, Newport put all the blues musicians in one giant house.
Oh, really? Okay.
And a guy talks about you can go from room to room and see these black musical geniuses and what an astonishing experience it was. So then we found a little bit of film from the Blues House. Then we started hunting up photographs, found several photographers had shot there. Then Joe Laro, my partner on the project up in New York, found audio recordings made by Gene Rosenthal, who Memphians may recognize because Gene was the guy who filmed and recorded the 69 Memphis Country Blues Festival.
Oh, really? Okay.
That Augusta Palmer uses some of that
in
the Blues Society, and Fat Possum has a whole film of it for free on YouTube. I recommend it.
Yeah.
As soon as this show is over, go to YouTube.
That's right.
Memphis 1969, it's called Memphis 69.
Yeah, that's
but
very
so, yeah.
Cool.
Annie is featured in that we have some performances of Fred and Annie jamming with John Hurt and these kids just shouting along. It's so much fun.
That's so great. You know, it was funny. A few years ago, this guy got in touch with me, and he was a friend of my wife and my sister-in-law. And he wanted to talk about doing voiceovers and stuff. So we met, we had lunch and stuff. We talked, he's a great guy. And we were talking along, and he said, well, you know, my grandfather was a blues guy. I said, really? You know, who was he? He said, well, you probably never heard of him. His name was Johnny Woods. And I said, wait a second.
Damn.
You know Johnny Woods? He said, really? I said, yeah. I said, he's in this film. And he had not heard anything about that film.
Wow, no kidding.
And so I steered him toward the film.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Isn't that wild?
Johnny Woods, man.
Yeah.
The Mudboy and the Neutrons would say that if they were playing their best, they knew they were playing their best when they could evoke Johnny Woods, when he would appear.
That's great.
Yeah.
I love it. Okay. All right. Folks, I'm talking with Robert Gordon this morning, and we're talking about his film as having its local premiere on Wednesday night at the Crosstown Theater.
Yes.
There are still tickets available.
Not many.
How do people get tickets?
IndieMemphis.org. Okay. Go to events. And then you'll see the Newport film is right there, and you can click through to get tickets.
Right.
Not many tickets left. Save me five, please. I forgot to order them for my cousins this morning.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
It's a benefit for Indy Memphis.
Oh,
so
good.
No comps. Everybody's paying, and we're thrilled about it and thrilled that the festival's coming back.
Yeah.
Really glad.
My daughter Savannah is, I think she's the president of the board.
Cool, man.
Yeah.
Cool.
So, keeping it alive, right?
That's right.
All right. Now, what have we got next?
Next is going to be some, I guess we can call this bluegrass, or it's certainly bluegrass stars. Mm-hmm. This is a duet with Bill Monroe and Doc Watson. Doc Watson is kind of a great exemplar of the folk tradition, a blind guy in Carolina who formed his own style just from listening and has a great voice and became, you know, a folk star. I think about, so this song is going to be What Would You Give in Exchange for Your Soul? It's Bill Monroe used to do it with his brother. They had a falling out. Now Bill Monroe's doing it with Doc Watson. And I think, wow, Doc, man, how does it feel for you to be sitting in there, you know, taking the place of Bill Monroe's brother?
Wow.
So we have a fantastic performance in the movie of this. This is a recording. I'm not sure when it's from, but we have a dynamite recording of What Would You Give in Exchange for Your Soul.
Here we go.
Here's the first number that I ever recorded back in 1935, back in Charlotte, North Carolina, with my brother Charlie Monroe. And back in the days, it was really mighty popular down through the Carolinas. What Would You Give in Exchange for Your Soul?
Brother of from the Savior today, risking your soul for the thing that decays. Oh, if today God should call you away, what would you give in exchange for your soul? What would you give
in exchange?
What would you give
in exchange?
What would you give in exchange for your soul? Oh, if today God should call you away,
give in exchange for your soul. Mercy is calling you, won't you give in? Is the dear Savior still tenderly pleading? Risk not your soul, it's precious in me. What would you give exchange for your soul? What would you give
in exchange?
What would you give
in exchange?
What would you give in exchange for your soul? Oh, if today God should call you, what would you give in exchange for your soul? More than all silver and gold of this earth, more than all jewels the Spirit is worth, God the Creator has given it birth. What would you give in exchange for your soul? What would you give? What would you give in exchange for your soul? Oh, if today God should call you away, what would you give in exchange for your soul?
Yeah, man, that one was new to me from the movie. I never heard it till we were making the movie.
That is great.
Some of these tracks we would throw up on the screen, you know, when we're just kind of surveying the footage and figuring out, logging the footage, figuring out what's there.
Yeah.
It was like, well, that's going in the movie.
Yeah.
You know, right. That came on the screen. It was like, okay, that's going in the movie.
Oh, that's so cool. That is so cool. How did this thing get started? I mean, you know, Newport, Rhode Island is not a hotbed of blues or folk music. I mean, how did it? In fact, we were just in Newport about 3 months ago.
Oh, yeah.
Beautiful place, but it's rich folk.
Yeah.
You know? I mean,
well,
that's what it is.
So George Ween, this Boston club promoter, got asked by some wealthy tobacco heiress to put on a jazz show one summer because all the rich folk were bored up there in Newport.
Yeah, okay.
So he put on the jazz show, and about the third year, folk was getting popular, so he put on a folk afternoon.
Okay.
And it sold out.
Wow.
That became an indication he should try out a separate weekend, which he did. And then he did that in 59 and 60, and then it tapered off. And in 63, he got George Ween got with Pete Seeger and said, Pete, I want to restart this folk festival. Yeah. And somehow this filmmaker, Murray Lerner, up in New York, got wind of all this and said, well, I got to go film this.
Yeah.
And
he just did it out of his own pocket?
I believe so.
Yeah, wow.
In coordination with the Newport Foundation. But, you know, he, I can tell you that he had cameras and not camera operators.
Ah, there you go. Yeah, there's a big difference.
Big difference.
Huge difference.
It's important to know how to focus.
That's right.
When you're trying to make a feature film you're going to share with other people, it's important to know how to focus. Oh, so there were certain things that sounded great, but we couldn't use.
Wow.
And at the end of 63, the folk festival was a big success, and they continued it for several. It continues now.
Yeah.
And Murray went back and filmed it through 66, so he had 4 years, 63 to 66. Dylan Goes Electric in 65. Yeah. Murray made a film called Festival in 67, nominated for an Academy Award in 68. Mm-hmm. Festival, by the way, premiered at the Venice Film Festival, which we didn't know until we premiered at the Venice Film Festival and found out we were following in the footsteps of Festival, which is great because our movie is made from the outtakes of Festival. There's like Murray shot about 80 hours, so his film's 90 minutes. That left me 78 and a half hours to work with.
Yeah. I guess you could find something in there, right?
Man, it was tough. It was tough just winnowing it down. We thought about doing a series for a while, but I'm real happy with the feature. A feature's got a lot of impact.
Sure, yeah.
And again, we're going to be showing it. Memphis premiere, advanced screening, Wednesday night, two nights from now, 7 p.m. at the Crosstown Theater. Benefit for Indie Memphis. Tickets at indiememphis.org.
Perfect. That's great. Okay, what are we going to hear next?
Going to hear a little blues. We're going to go to the records there.
Okay.
That button nearest you.
Yeah.
That's going to be the one you hit.
Okay.
Are we turned up over there on turntable?
We are.
Okay,
Are we ready to do it? This is gonna be, what have we got?
This is going
to
be John Lee Hooker doing a song that's in the movie. I haven't heard, pulled out this record in a long time when I was, when you told me to pull out tracks. I was like, oh, I have a recording of this. I wonder how it sounds.
Okay.
This is Boom Boom. Oh. We hear him do it live in 63 at the festival. And it and John Lee Hooker, man, he is stunning.
I bet. Here we go. Okay, that, whoa, we don't need that, hang on. All right, there we go. Okay, that was John Lee Hooker, Boom, 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 Boom. Man.
Yeah, he does it in the film Solo Acoustic.
Oh, really?
And he's just like young and sexy, and he's on the stage. This is one of the cool things about Newport in the early days. They, like, John Lee Hooker's on stage performing this. Dave Van Ronk is sitting behind him, just howling with laughter at Hooker's performance. John Hurt is on stage. John Hammond is on stage.
Good God.
Just like it's just, and kids are on stage.
Yeah.
The audience is on stage. It's so informal.
I love it. I love it. Wow. That is so cool. So when you first heard about this footage, did you know you were going to do a film?
Hell yeah, man.
Yeah.
Someone calls you up and says, "Hey, I've got 80 hours of footage from the Newport Folk Festival. Do you want to make a movie?" There's only one answer.
Yes. Right. Yes.
Yeah. Exactly. But it took us a really long time.
Yeah.
We actually began this before COVID.
Did you really?
We spent several years trying to raise the money.
Yeah.
You know, just like when I made a movie a decade ago called Best of Enemies with Gore Vidal, William Buckley.
Right. Yes.
End of Civil Discourse. And people were going, "Yeah, that sounds really interesting. But what does it have to do with now?"
Uh-huh.
And they were saying the same thing about this.
Sure.
And to me, when you see this, it's, even though it's shot 50, 60 years ago, it's amazingly relevant to the contemporary moment, both because of the rapid pace of social change, the sense of social protest and upheaval, and the broad sense of democracy that is evident through this dynamic range of performers.
Yeah, and people need to see that, and they need to be told.
It's a reminder.
Yeah. Yeah, because that is one of those inflection points where things changed, and things could have changed more, you know, or could have changed the other way.
Yeah.
You know, so who knows? But those inflection points are when we really learn and when the country changes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah, yeah. And you know, we live in a time right now of profound change, and you know, the past couple of years, the administration's changed a lot of things in the government, and it's a reminder that change can happen fast.
That's right.
And it can happen for, you know, whatever your politics may be, it can happen for good or bad, but it can happen fast.
That's
so we're hoping this movie inspires change.
Good. I'm sure it will. Well, I can't wait to see it. That is Wednesday night, and you can get your tickets at IndieMemphis.org.
Correct, sir.
And be there. This is going to be a national thing, but a real Memphis thing too. Because
Thank you. You
put your, you know, when you put, you know, your stamp on this, it's nobody else can do that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
You know, nobody else can do
that. Well, I have said that this is a movie that began in Newport, Rhode Island, lived in a vault for decades in Long Island, and has come to fruition in Midtown Memphis. And this movie's been, we've been in all over Europe.
Right.
Australia. If I hadn't been asleep at the wheel and had responded properly to the invitation from Moscow, we'd have already screened in
Russia.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, man, and it's been all over the U.S.
Yeah.
It's been slow coming here because, well, a complicated set of reasons, but we were glad to finally be able to get it all sorted out and do this benefit for Indie Memphis.
That's wonderful. That is wonderful. Did you wind up with any, like, favorite, I mean, just like all time, just, yes, this is my favorite moment, or were they all favorite moments?
There was a lot, and everybody in the making kind of had their favorites, and so in the end, we were trying to figure out, there was, like, some songs would be in, they'd pop out. You know, you'd cut them in, then they'd get squoze out.
Yeah.
And at the end, actually, the movie ends, the credits begin, and it's about a 7 or 8 minute credit roll because there was so much great
so
stuff
music,
we hadn't fit in that we just made this beautiful end credits performance.
That's
which
so
includes
great.
One of my favorites, Reverend Claude Jeter, who is a preacher and gospel singer who was a big influence on Al Green.
Oh, really?
He does the high vocal thing.
Uh-huh.
Him and the Swan Silvertones.
Wow.
So there's a Swan Silvertones performance that evokes Al Green in the end credit roll. It's pretty amazing. It's maybe my favorite, but there's a lot of favorites.
How cool. And I got one more question. How did you take, so you took this film that was shot 16 millimeter, right?
Negative. Yeah, we had the negative stores.
Negative.
Yeah.
Wow.
and you blew it up to HD.
4K, baby.
4K.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
How long did that take, blowing it up?
Well, the first thing we did, it had already been, when we began the movie, it had been transferred.
Oh, it had. Okay.
But not to 4K, to HD. So we are rough. Yeah. Our offline was an HD.
Okay, that's nice. Yeah,
yeah, that was nice. And then it was really fun to go back once we locked it, to go back and drop in the 4K footage and pull out the blacks. It's a black and white film.
Yeah,
to pull out the blacks and to do all the tonal corrections really brought it to life.
Yeah,
the audio is incredible. A lot of it's, you know, it's we had a couple sources to work with.
Okay,
Kevin Houston from Memphis Nesbitt Recording Service.
Yeah,
he did the final mix.
He's the best, man.
Man, it was just it was old home week. The whole movie feels like old home week.
That's
at one point, we cut it once, and then we kind of threw it away and started over. And at one point in the first edit, someone said to me, "Hey, man, it's not the Newport Blues Festival." Because I was like, I want to put all my favorite stuff in there.
That's funny. It's funny how you change your mind as you know more.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, it just, you know, this is a, I always tell people, you know, doing something like that is like, it's a 10,000 piece jigsaw puzzle that's never been put together.
Exactly.
And will never be put together like that again.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like 10,000 pieces and they all fit.
Right.
They all intersect with each other. There's not one way to make the picture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Okay, what are we going to hear next?
Traditional folk. Amazingly, I remember when this popped up on the screen, it was like, oh my God, that's Maybelle Carter. And so it'll be here from the original Carter family. This is Maybelle. I pulled out a version of her doing Wildwood Flower that was popular in the 70s when this record with the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band came out, Will the Circle Be Unbroken?
Oh, yeah.
In a way, this record is kind of a cousin of our film and a cousin of the Anthology of American Folk Music.
Right.
It's younger players and older players rediscovering each other, getting to know each other, bringing back a lot of songs.
I listened to that, to those records for a year, and almost like nothing else.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Some of those things were just, you know, and you could feel the tension
and the dialogue.
Yeah,
you know, the getting to know each other.
That's right.
Yeah.
And finally, you know, it just lands with, okay, we're all people and we're connected with music here, and nothing could be any greater.
Hey, while we're talking about connected with music, let me plug. I'm a DJ on this show, on this radio
station.
That's
right. Yes.
Let me plug my show.
That's right.
Tuesday afternoons, 3 to 4, 1 hour. It's all I can take, and it's more than you can take. You don't have to tune in. I don't recommend it, but I am on 3 to 4, Making a Mess.
You've got a great show. I tune in every time I can. Usually if I'm in the car, I know who's on, and I'll tune in, but you always have.
I know who's on because it's dead air.
No, you're always bringing something special, and it's, you know, and being able to kind of, you know, because what you do is, you know, you're showing people who you are and what you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the real thing. I mean, I'm telling you, if people like you didn't share what you know, we would be poorer.
Well, let me just say that you've got a great show here weekly, allowing people to come in and share what they know.
Love doing it.
Well, you're a great host, and it provides the range of what Memphis has to offer. I love the way that you know, it's all mixed up. You never know what to expect.
You never know. I never know when somebody walks in here what we're going to hear. We've heard Ode to Billy Joe a lot, which is great. I want somebody to come in and write a song, Ode to Billy Joel, and see how that goes. All right, Les, that's enough of that.
All right, here comes Maybelle Carter. You got turntable turned up over there?
Yes, we're ready. Here
all
we
right,
go.
Here we go.
The roses so red and the lilies so fair. and to cherish me over all others above. How my heart is now wandering, no misery can tell. He's left me no warning, no words of farewell.
Well, all right. Mother Maybelle Carter, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, man.
Doesn't get it? Much better than that.
Oh, my God. I couldn't believe when we, you know, she showed up on the screen in the edit room. I was like, oh, wow. My God.
God, that was really early.
She's backed by two guys from the New Lost City Ramblers.
Oh, really? Okay.
John Cohen and Tracy Schwartz.
Okay.
And they just, you can see them beaming with pride and also amazement, like, oh my God, we're back in Maybelle Carter.
That's right. I bet you probably saw that a lot, and just people in the crowd just thinking, man, I can't believe I'm here and hearing this stuff. You know?
It's absolutely true, and you can see it on the screen. You see these people, in, like you said, in the audience and on stage, just going, I can't believe this is happening.
Wow.
It's a real thrill.
Man, I tell you, we don't think enough about people who believed in the music and did all of this for the things that they love,
uh-huh.
but also for posterity.
Uh-huh.
I mean, just think about this. If this stuff was lost,
mm-hmm.
What a crime, and so much has been lost.
Exactly. That's what pains me. And I know I've been involved in projects where, you know, there were great goods out there that I didn't get. You know, a guy, when I was writing the Muddy Waters book, by the way, sitting here with the second most famous man from Rolling Fork, Mississippi, I'm honored, man.
Some would say maybe the third. I'm not sure, but I remember when you came down to Rolling Fork one time,
and you
got up and talked about your book, and you signed some books for the Rolling Fork Library, and I'll always be grateful to
you for
driving down and eating a good fish sandwich.
Yeah, that's right.
And talking to Robert Morganfield, Muddy's half-brother,
and that was great.
Yeah, you know, the main street in Rolling Fork was China Street because there were four Chinese grocery stores on there, even in that small town. And about 8 years ago, they renamed the street to Robert Morganfield Street.
That is so great.
It's the main street in Rolling Fork.
That is
so
great.
He was a sweet guy. He was such a nice man.
Here's a little story for the filmmakers out there who understand the expense of actual film. When we were shooting the Muddy Waters documentary, I went down there with the guy from here, Craig Smith, I think, was the camera operator. Mm-hmm. And I explained to Robert, okay, we were shooting film. I said, we're going to roll the film, and so I'm going to ask you the question off a film,
right?
So we don't waste the film on it, and then you're going to give me the answer when the film rolls. He said, "Okay, I got it." So I asked him the question. We rolled. He said, "Are you rolling?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Okay, well, I just want to say I'm Robert Morganfield. I want to thank you for coming down." And he gave me like a 2-minute introduction, and I was just thinking, "Ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching."
That's right.
but I was working on that Muddy Waters book, and there was I hate telling this story. It's a really sad one. One of the guys who went with John Work and Alan Lomax to Clarksdale in 1941 and 42 as part of the Library of Congress Fisk research study, he had a bunch of documents, and I found him in Texas.
Okay.
And he was aged and infirm.
Yeah.
And I kept trying to get to him, and then he passed away before I could get there. And as far as I know, all those materials got, you know, put on the curb and tossed. Oh, and it pains me to have been so close and have them be have eluded me.
Man, that's so tough.
Yeah, it
that
really
is. So tough. Wow. Wow. All right, well, let's push along here. We got about 8 minutes left. Man, the hour has blown
by. 8 minutes. Okay, dang.
That's right. So what are we going
to
play?
Let's do two music tracks back to back so we can make sure to fit them in here.
Yes.
John Hurt, I think I queued up doing Spike Driver Blues.
Good.
Which is John Henry, not in the movie. We have a great version. If you one day you'll get to see the version of this that we have from the Newport Folk Festival, and you'll go, man, what you have in the movie must be great, because if you don't have that, that's amazing.
That's great.
Spike Driver Blues, and then we'll hear some electric Dylan doing. When Dylan goes electric, this is interesting. Uh-huh. When he goes electric in 1965 at the Newport Folk Festival, he's like 2 weeks before has released Like a Rolling Stone. It's his first record with electric guitars, drums, you know, it's a full-on rock band, but he's never performed that way.
Right.
And so that's the tension at Newport. What's he going to do?
Yeah. Oh, very cool. All right. So here we go. This is John Hurt.
Hit that button.
All right.
Yeah.
Take this hammer and cat to my captain. Tell him I'm gone. Tell him I'm gone. Tell him I'm gone. Take this hammer and cat to my captain. Tell him I'm gone. Just tell him I'm gone. I'm sure he's gone. This is a hammer that killed Johnny Ray, but it won't kill me, but it won't kill me, but it won't kill me. This is a hammer that killed John Henry, but it won't kill me, but it won't kill me, ain't gonna kill me. It's a long ways from East Colorado, honey, to my home, honey, to my home, honey, to my home. It's a long ways to East Colorado, honey, to my home, honey, to my home. That's why I'm gone. John Henry, he left his hammer, plain side the road, plain side the road, plain side the road. John Henry, he left his hammer all over in rain. All over in rain, that's why I'm gone. John Henry's a steel driving boy, but he went down, but he went down, but he went down. John Henry was steel driving boy, but he went down, but he went down. That's why I'm gone.
Okay, here we go. not with that. Here we go with some Bob Dylan. And, you know, Robert, we should probably say goodbye okay. right now. And, folks, I've been here with Robert Gordon. His film is coming up Wednesday night, and you can get tickets at IndieMemphis.org. Tell me about it.
7 p.m. Crosstown Theater, Wednesday, July 22nd, Memphis Advance premiere of Newport and the Great Folk Dream. Gonna love it.
Don't miss this one. Folks, we will see you next Monday morning at 9 o'clock.
Thank you, Willie.
Hey, man, this has been great. I really had a great time. And here's Bob Dylan doing a live version of Like a Rolling Stone.
You find out now you're gonna have to get used to it.